I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, well, we finally know the truth about Paco, and it's not pretty. Plus, is the climate grift finally coming to an end? Plus, another Washington city pledges to keep its citizens safe if only you'll pass higher taxes. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this little show of ours for just $5 a month. It's how we make this show possible. Go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And while you're there, take a few minutes to shop our merch store. Hello, friends. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And thank you for being the wonderful sleuths you are. Couldn't do it without you. Here we are. What kind of schmuck am I? We're searching for Paco for 2 days, and it takes an undivided subscriber. Thank you, Watermelon, to finally ID them for us. We were able to get some corroboration. We were also able to confirm some details with Ice Seattle, and the truth behind Paco is even worse than I thought it would be. And it really is no laughing matter. So Paco isn't Paco at all. Paco is a man named Yusef Zarate Bourbon, a Mexican national. Here is his booking photo from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Can we see it, Nicole? There it is. So we went from Paco, the sketch of the man on the horse, to Paco, the real picture behind the sketch, to Yusef Zarate Bourbon, a Mexican national arrested by Homeland Security Investigations and the U.S. Marshals for, well, being in the country illegally, but also because he's wanted for murder in his home country. So for those of you who haven't been following this story, I'll set it up a little bit, but then we want to get to all the updates and how all of this came to be. So there's a shady article in the Olympian, says that a Lacey business owner has been abducted by ICE. The only source for this news article seems to be a GoFundMe that was set up by an activist, an anti-ICE activist who happened to live next door to this guy named Paco. And we originally became interested in it because the news article had no independent verification whatsoever. It was just this sob story about a guy named Paco, no last name, no other information about why ICE might have picked him up. They were calling it an abduction. And it just all didn't ring true. It didn't ring true to us. It didn't ring true to you. I asked you guys yesterday if you thought Paco was a real person. 100% of the people who took our poll, more than 1,000 people, said no. 100% said you didn't believe Paco was a real person. So we had gone about reaching out to the woman behind the GoFundMe, trying to check property records in the area, checking business licenses, because she also said he owned a farm, he owned a mechanic shop, couldn't find anyone named Paco, couldn't put the pieces together. So that's when a couple things happened late last night. I got a message from an undivided subscriber who said, hey, I think I've ID'd Paco. And then at the same time, we got a message on our website from a basically a landlord down in the Olympia area who said, hey, I rented space to this guy, Paco, for a mechanic shop, but I didn't know him by the name Paco. I knew him by the name Yusef Zarate Bourbon. So that's all happening at the same time. And it turns out back on June 27th, Homeland Security Investigations and the U.S. Marshals had actually put out a picture of this Yusef guy and said, we arrested this Mexican national who's wanted for murder in his own country for violating the conditions of his entry into the United States. But it wasn't until, if you can bring that picture back up, Nicole, it wasn't until you put the pictures side by side that you could tell it's the same guy. There's this giant mole on his chin. It's present in the picture that was used to create the AI sketch. And so it's like, okay, we got him. This is very obviously him. All the corroboration we were getting from the individual who rented him a business space to run his business out of all put the pieces together. So here is what we have learned from Yusef Zarate Bourbon. Again, Yusef Zarate Bourbon, 34 years old. He's a Mexican citizen. He entered the U.S. on a tourist visa. How many times have we heard that story? Came to the U.S. on a tourist visa, not came to the U.S. seeking asylum or anything like that, entered the U.S., oh, I'm just a tourist, and he never freaking left. Turns out he's wanted for murder. Now, I have to assume, and we're trying to get additional information from ICE, that that warrant for murder out of Mexico wasn't present when he came into the U.S. on a tourist visa, or I think he would have been picked up at that time. And then he wasn't arrested by ICE. There are different factions that perform different tasks. He was arrested by the U.S. Marshals and Homeland Security Investigations. So that's who picked him up. Yes, near his farm that does exist. He does have a farm. It's named, it's called Zarate Farms. So they picked him up out there. He's now awaiting deportation. None of that, of course, was talked about in the GoFundMe that raised $12,000 that was put forth by this Carissa Miller woman who owns a farm next door to his. And by, I would say, an hour or so after we had broke the news that Paco is Youssef and he was wanted for murder, this Carissa Miller woman starts to go dark on social media. So as of right now, the GoFundMe page is down. And also her Instagram page, where she was posting these videos about this horrible thing that happened to Paco, nuked. We heard from GoFundMe this morning. They said, what we can tell you right now is that we took the fundraiser down. So GoFundMe nuked the fundraiser overnight based on our reporting and the fact that they weren't able to confirm essentially the story that she was telling. I do believe that means that the money will be refunded. If you've donated to that fundraiser and you want your money back and you haven't got it yet, contact GoFundMe for sure. It seems like the only truths, and I said I thought it would be the case, that there would be some slivers of truth in this story. I said I thought it would be very weird if this Carissa Miller woman, who has an active social media profile, has an actual business tied to the accounts where she's making these claims. I said I thought it'd be really weird if she just manufactured this entire story out of thin air. I said there probably is a guy, he probably does live next to her, his name's probably not Paco, and there probably was a pretty good reason ICE detained him. And that turns out to be the truth. The two things that were true is that he owned a farm. It was called Zarate Farms, and he also owned a mechanic shop. It was called Riez Automotive Repair on Martin Way. It is now closed down. We know it's closed down because we were contacted by an individual who had rented that space, leased that space to Paco, who he never knew as Paco, was always Youssef, rented that space, and his Youssef's family had come late last month and cleaned it out and shut the business down because he was detained by ICE. So all of that, and I want to really just a note about this Carissa Miller woman, because she's getting a lot of hate online right now. I think that she was very eager to believe a sob story about this guy because she hates ICE. I mean, she's all over social media, F immigration. Now, I'm pretty confident that she didn't know he was wanted for murder. I'm guessing Youssef wasn't running around town saying, hey, I'm in the country illegally. I came here on a tourist visa and I'm wanted for murder back in Mexico, right? So I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and think that she really thought this was, you know, a guy who was in the country illegally, but who was working at a farm, had a mechanic shop, and who was a good neighbor. I don't think that she knew he was a murderer. She knows now, though. She's never responded to our request for comment about this story. We've sent her multiple emails, and now, of course, she goes dark on Instagram. And, you know, I got an email from one of our viewers this morning saying, well, maybe the family, you know, Youssef's family should still get the money. No, because, and I get it, you know, I'm sympathetic, but the GoFundMe was based on a lie. And people donated to it not knowing that he was wanted for murder in Mexico. So that money was, it's ill-gotten gains, in my opinion. So I don't know what this Carissa Miller woman did or did not know, but I know that she did not know enough to be throwing out these outlandish claims that she had no confirmation on and using it to pin a sob story, to spin a sob story that got people to donate thousands of dollars. So all of that aside, not knowing her intentions, her motivations, although I know she dislikes immigration and ICE, the real bad guy here, besides Youssef, who might have killed someone, right? The real bad guy here is the mainstream news. And I'll stick to that all day long. Because they have an obligation that Carissa Miller didn't have. And that is to get to the real truth. That's the job. And as you guys know, we started this because we were frustrated that the Olympian ran a news story with the headline, Lacey business owner abducted by ICE, according to online fundraiser. A headline that fuels fear and anger and hatred and fuels the violence that we're seeing up and down the West Coast directed at ICE agents. Because you've got the media suggesting that they're out there just abducting people. And not one fact pushed in the GoFundMe was ever independently verified by the Olympian. The entire story was based on the narrative pushed in the GoFundMe. So we have reached out now twice to the Olympian, to the reporter on this story, Rolf Boone, and to the editors of the Olympian. They have not gotten back to us once. We checked just before we came on. The story is still up. It has not been edited. No editorial note has been added to it. That is disturbing. They have now had 3 full days to do their own reporting, the reporting they should have done at the beginning of this, to make any sort of correction or help just take the story down so it doesn't spread any further. And then when you're ready, post an update with nothing short of a full retraction and an apology is acceptable. Now, I know they're aware of this. How do I know that? Well, because we've had several viewers who reached out to the Olympian directly and to this reporter, and one of them said they got a response. Rolf Boone said, I'm on vacation, but I'll address the story on Monday. Not good enough. I get it, you're on vacation. There are other journalists at the Olympian and editors who can update this story. But here they are responding to readers, but they won't respond to our request for comments since Monday. So I told you I got an out-of-office response from the reporter a couple days ago when we first reached out. And so maybe I would say, well, maybe he's really out of the office. Like, he's in Timbuktu freaking too, and he doesn't know what's going on, and nobody's at their computer. But now I know he's responding to other people. So he knows about this story, but the Olympian doesn't care enough to take it down. And why should I expect that they care enough to take it down? They didn't care enough to fact-check anything before they put the freaking thing up. So wild. So the Paco debacle. See what we did there? The Paco debacle has, I think, come to an end for the most part. We now know it's not Paco. He's Youssef Zarate Bourbon. He's awaiting deportation because he came into the U.S. on a tourist visa, never left, and is wanted for murder in Mexico. And there is story after story after story being peddled by the legacy media with no criticality, just like this one. This is just one of many. But I'm glad that we could play a small part in our citizen sleuths. I love you guys. Gosh, you're good. Could play a small part in getting the GoFundMe taken down, in bringing the truth to light. Hopefully people who bought this story, hook, line, and sinker, including the journalists at the Olympian, will think twice the next time they're peddled a sob story where there isn't any independent verification. So the only other update I'm interested in doing on this is if we hear back from Carissa and she has some sort of mea culpa. Again, maybe she's just, I am open to her just being a good-hearted person who really did have this great neighbor. I don't think he has ever gone by Paco. I think she used that name maybe because she found out what he was really arrested for and was trying to cover her tracks. I don't know. But maybe she started as a good-hearted person, wanted to do something nice for her neighbor. Story was picked up, and now she's like, oh, shoot. I think her coming out and saying, look, I've learned more, and I'm sorry, would be just fine. That would be just fine. I'd like to see it. I don't expect it. I do expect it from the Olympian. So hopefully the Olympian does what the Olympian should do, because you cannot trust a news outlet that won't correct an obviously false story. And then we'll have an update on that. But Paco is Youssef. Youssef is heading back to Mexico and might spend the rest of his life in a Mexican prison. Who knows? Crazy. So speaking of people who came into the country illegally on tourist visas and just decided to stay, we have a follow-up on the story of Fernando Alves Roca. He is that Brazilian national who came into the U.S. in 2018 under a tourist visa and somehow managed to almost immediately get a job teaching theater at a high school in Kirkland, Washington. We covered this quite a bit on the show last week because, of course, all the initial headlines that came out were, oh, Kirkland man, theater instructor, picked up by ICE. What is going on here? This is all wrong. And there's actually been a lot of developments over this in the last couple of days. And I think it goes to show, you know, you can't always believe the initial narrative from the government either. I mean, I'm much more likely to believe what ICE says than what some activists say, but I think there's been instances where we've gotten incomplete information from the federal government, from Homeland Security, from Immigration and Customs Enforcement as well. So we have to look at everything critically at this point. We have to look at everything, try to find whatever information we can before we buy into any particular narrative. So one of the things that's come out, and we suspected it kind of early on, it had been thrown out there by his attorney. So Fernando Roca came into the country on a tourist visa. And then right as that tourist visa was expiring, he applied for asylum. So I stand by the fact that he came into the U.S. on fraudulent terms. I don't think he ever intended to leave. He comes in from Brazil, and the day it's about to expire, he applies for asylum. I don't think you should be allowed to do that. But that's what he did. And his attorney says because of that asylum application, he was able to work legally in the United States. I don't think he should have been able to do that either. Because again, you defrauded the American taxpayer when you came in. There are ways you can seek asylum. There are appropriate avenues to seek asylum. But coming here on a tourist visa and saying, this place is nice, I want to stay here, that's not one of them. But that's what happened in this case. So he had been detained. And now we find out he might be released. This is from KUOW. And of course, the picture they use of him. He looks like a nice guy, you know? Hey man, if you had come here seeking asylum, had a legitimate claim and wanted to teach kids theater, and you can pass a background check that's thorough, by all means, good for you. But that's not what happened here. You should have done it the right way. A KOW says, high school theater manager to bond out of Tacoma immigrant lockup. During a hearing Tuesday, Tacoma Immigration Court Judge Tammy Fitting granted Fernando Alves Roca a $10,000 bond. His attorney, Adolfo Ojeda Casamiro, said Roca entered the U.S. on a tourist visa in 2018, then filed an asylum application a day before his visa expired. He said Roca has had a valid work permit since his asylum application has been pending. Now that Roca is in deportation proceedings, his attorney said that will speed up Roca's asylum case. However, it'll also be tougher for Roca to fight to stay in the U.S. compared to a regular asylum case. This is a quote from his attorney that I actually think is a great quote for the side of common sense, but KOW publishes it, I think, with the intention of it being this really sad thing. His attorney said, up to last year, somebody in his situation would not have been arrested. I think the government, specifically Trump and Stephen Miller, are just trying to put as much pressure as they can on any and all immigrants. Yeah, he wouldn't have been arrested a year ago. And that's the problem. People were just allowed to come here on tourist visas, overstay them, and get jobs, like in this case, working with kids, or over in Maine as the Jamaican guy who got a job as a freaking police officer. Or in the case of Paco, aka Youssef, he was able to be a valid business owner with the state of Washington, run a farm, run a mechanic shop, all while being in the United States illegally because of our sanctuary policies. I don't think that's right. The attorney added ICE will still try to deport Roca because his tourist visa lapsed after he first entered the country. His attorney said, at this point, it seems likely they're finding reasons to apply laws they have never applied before. Yeah, they're laws, though. They're enforcing the law. Just because Biden didn't doesn't make it wrong for Trump to do it. And then the attorney is warning other clients that this could also happen to them. It probably will happen to them. So, you know, a good idea is self-deport. As DHS says you can get some money from the federal government to self-deport. And then you still have an avenue to come back into the United States one day legally. That's the best case scenario for these individuals who came into the country under false pretenses. Self-deport. Have an opportunity to come back, if you're Roca, to come back to teach theater one day, to run a farm and be here legally, to run a mechanic shop and be here legally, and maybe to be a police officer and be here legally. But you want to be able to break the rules, defraud the government, come here under false pretenses, flee from murder. Roca had a theft case out on him in Brazil. I don't know how serious of a theft charge it was, but still, he's wanted in Brazil. You want to be able to flee here and set up a life and never have any problems. And under President Donald Trump, that's just not going to happen anymore. And I'm fine with that. We can still use nuance and say, hey, we can still have empathy even. I have empathy for human beings whose lives aren't as blessed as those of us who just happen to be born in America. I didn't do anything to deserve that. I just happened to be born here because the two human beings that came together to create me happened to live here. Yay for me. I get it that other human beings aren't as lucky. And I would love for them to be able to share in the American dream. But we have to have rules for people coming here. We have to vet people who are coming here. There has to be a process in place or it will be chaos. Like we saw during the 4 years of the Biden administration. So I can feel bad for Rocha. I'm sure he was a cool theater teacher. But every other person who teaches in our public schools, teachers, staff members, they have to go through these rigorous background checks to make sure that they can work safely around other people's kids. You can't do a proper background check on someone who came here from Brazil on a tourist visa, because I know damn well that you didn't go back and get his criminal history in Brazil, or Brazil would have said, hey, he's wanted for theft here. We want him back. And people from other countries aren't the only ones who do this. Have you ever watched Dateline? Where do all the men who kill their wives go? Mexico! They flee to Mexico or they find a jurisdiction that won't send you back home. And we gotta go try to get them and try to get them back. Same thing. They go try to set up some life somewhere tropical like it never ever happened. And then eventually they get caught and then they end up on Dateline and then everybody's, so that happens. It's just, and it can't happen and it shouldn't happen. If I commit a crime here and I go into Mexico, or even if I don't. Hell, I'm going to Europe next month. If I fly there and think I really like it, is it okay for me to stay? Of course not. We have to stop this. It's asinine. And the media is pushing all these narratives that make it seem cruel when it's really just the law. And if you don't like the law, then push to have the law changed. Don't push for the government just not to enforce it and to have open borders, because that is an absolute recipe for disaster, as we have seen. So we'll see if he stays. We'll see if Rocha cares enough about our laws and our order to stay, to go through the deportation hearings and to live with the outcome, if the outcome is that he's sent back to Brazil. So a couple updates on some stories there. It's just wild stuff. This is common sense. We don't have to make it about hate and fear and anger and assault ICE agents and dox them and all of these things. Let's have a nice conversation about immigration policy. And let's be willing to say, yeah, that guy deserves to go back. Like, Youssef, homie, you gotta go back. You gotta go back. They think you killed someone. Like, go figure that out. Oh, for the love. Okay, huge news on the climate grift front. The head of the EPA announcing that they're dismantling, and the best way to describe it is basically some federal, I would say, precedents that has allowed for all these crazy climate policies to be enacted across the country and in places like Washington. First, if you are thinking about, oh, sorry, Nicole, I got to do a commercial first. First, all of us are planning for retirement. The question is, are you managing your risk? Is you the person running your portfolio properly managing risk? I mean, think about how many things are happening right now between tariffs, even the announcement that we're about to make, and how all of that shakes up the economy, can impact the markets, can impact your investments. So you need someone who's looking at all of that actively and trying to manage risk. So talk to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. He is the chief investment officer, and schedule a free, really just second opinion with their Know Your Risk portfolio review. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. I mean, do you know what your risk management strategy is? Are you confident in the composition of your portfolio for 2025? Let Bulwark Capital show you a full reveal of how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only got one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Don't put it off. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, huge announcement from the EPA. EPA releases proposal to rescind Obama-era endangerment finding regulations that paved the way for electric vehicle mandates. So a lot of this is going to focus on the auto industry, but I think it's really much larger than that. And we'll explain this endangerment finding in a moment, or rather we'll let Lee Zeldin, the head of the EPA, explain how all of this came to be. Here he is speaking on Fox News.
We're not going to go along with applying extreme economic pain on Americans who can least afford it. President Trump, when he first called me asking me to be the EPA administrator, to his last phone call to me when we last spoke, has been focused on bringing back and protecting American auto jobs. We want the American auto industry to thrive. We want to apply common sense. The American public demanded it. We want to make sure that cars are affordable again. And after the endangerment finding came out, not only were there all sorts of mobile source emission standards, but they also came out with trying to regulate out of existence all sorts of stationary sources. They started applying it to airplanes and more. We're talking about many trillions of dollars. Where does the authority come from? It came from the Obama EPA deciding very creatively with a whole bunch of mental leaps that they were going to just claim an authority that we believe, after a very plain reading of these Supreme Court cases, we don't have.
Yeah, so I'm just going to read a part of a Politico story that kind of lays this out. It says the so-called endangerment finding, which the Obama administration issued in 2009, laid out a comprehensive case for how human emissions of carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases threaten human health and welfare. That finding serves as the legal basis for most of EPA's climate rules, including limits on power plant and vehicle emissions. And by undoing it, Lee Zeldin, who you heard from there, says it would eliminate the holy grail of the climate change religion. So it would basically give states like ours less of a basis to be able to institute some of the very costly climate policies that were pushed through, particularly during the Governor Jay Inslee era. Here is Lee Zeldin on the Ruthless podcast, and he's talking about something we talk about quite a bit, which is this whole climate change agenda really boils down to money.
Most Americans, we care about the environment. We want clean air, land, and water. Conservatives love the environment, want to be good stewards of the environment. There are people who then, in the name of climate change, are willing to bankrupt the country. Yep. In the name of environmental justice, they will get tens of billions of dollars appropriated to their friends rather than actually remediating environmental issues. So they created this endangerment finding, and then they're able to put all these regulations on vehicles, on airplanes, on stationary sources to basically regulate out of existence, in many cases, a lot of forms of segments of our economy.
Yeah, and all that drove costs up. We talk about it on the show all the time. You know, that's the basis really for the Climate Commitment Act and this idea that we have to dramatically, we have to put a price on carbon so that polluters have to buy it, and then it drives up everything. Gas, cost of groceries as a result, cost of energy, which is through the roof. Our state has brought in $4 billion, as we discussed on the show yesterday, through the Climate Commitment Act since it took effect at the beginning of 2023. And only a small fraction of that has actually been used to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's going to climate equity projects. It's going to studies, to growing the size of government. It's going to help cities and counties plan for climate change. It's insane. And a lot of it, millions of dollars, goes into the pockets of cronies and allies. There was a state senator who was vital in getting the Climate Commitment Act passed. What did he do as soon as the CCA became law? He got the hell out of Olympia and that, what, $70,000 a year career? I didn't even think it's that. And now he's making millions of dollars working with an environmental company that's being funded in part by the CCA, that gets money from the CCA that he created. It's so obvious when you look at it. And when he says, Lee Zeldin, that this has become political, right? It's impossible to ignore that element, that this has become political, or else at least 70% of the money coming in through the CCA would be used to actually tackle greenhouse gas emissions. Instead, it's going to nonsense. That's how you know it's political. But also, in the response from our Attorney General, Nick Brown, he wrote after this, as Washington battles wildfires and the nation swelters under extreme heat, Donald Trump and his EPA want to gut the rules regulating harmful climate pollution. The endangerment finding that EPA wants to undo is a sound, science-based finding that greenhouse gases endanger the public health and public welfare of current and future generations. If the president is successful, that danger will still exist. The federal government just won't do anything about it. My office has been aware this was in the works, and I will consider all options if EPA continues down this cynical path. We won't stand by as our children's future is sacrificed to appease fossil fuel interests. And so he's going to sue over it. He sues over everything. But that first sentence, as Washington battles wildfires, I don't seem to recall him saying anything a couple weeks ago when his buddy Bob Ferguson, the governor of the state of Washington, and his party, the Democratic Party, slashed funding for wildfire preparedness in Washington state. This was in the Washington State Standard. State spending had largely kept up with that target until this year, with the department receiving $115 million in the last two-year budget and $130 million in the one before that to fight wildfires. Then this year, as lawmakers confronted a budget shortfall, they slashed the wildfire preparedness funding to just $60 million for the next 2 years. Now, if Nick Brown were really worried about wildfires, were really worried about them tearing through our state, he would have sent out a post with his concern over that, saying, hey, you know, we're in this dangerous situation. He could chalk it up to climate if he wants to, extreme temperatures, climate change. This is not the time to cut funding for wildfires. But he doesn't care. It's about politics. So he'll blame Donald Trump for wildfires and them getting away with this EPA rule. But he won't look at his own party and say, yeah, we're not making wildfires any better either, because it's all about politics. It's all about scoring points. And it's all about what? Blaming Orange Man bad. Now, I still don't know how exactly this EPA rule change would affect the Climate Commitment Act. You might recall that as soon as Trump took office a second time, he directed his agencies to look at some of these, I don't know how he characterized them exactly, but like policies that go against American energy independence. And so one of the policies I know that's on the radar of the federal government is Washington's Climate Commitment Act and states like California that have a similar carbon market. So if the federal government can be the one to do away with the CCA because voters wouldn't repeal it, that would be fantastic. And we already know that the federal government has made substantial progress in trying to do away with these impossible to implement electric vehicle goals. Like, we don't even have enough infrastructure to charge all the electric vehicles they say they want to have by a date uncertain. So this is good. Even, you know, Todd Myers at the Washington Policy Center, he isn't the biggest Trump fan, but he is a fan of the environment. And he's been very supportive of what Donald Trump has done with these environmental regulations that don't actually improve the environment. They just make everything more expensive for the working class. So the environment doesn't change, but everyone gets poorer and the politicians and their cronies and allies get richer as a result. Ridiculous. That is such good news. Okay, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, Seattle will keep you safe if you'll approve new tax increases. They become just the latest city to make that proposition to voters. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge because it could save you thousands of dollars a year and it costs you nothing. So that's really the sell. It kind of sells itself. We all need insurance. If you're dealing with your insurance on your own, or maybe, I'm sorry, maybe you had your brother's cousin's stepsister or something, and they were handling your insurance for 10 years, maybe get a second opinion with First Mark. They'll go out, they'll go shop the market for you. They'll come back with their recommendations, and they might say, hey, you know, the insurance you got is great. We'd stick with that. And they'll turn away your business. They've done that to some undivided viewers, and I think that's the sign of an honest company. Or, like others who've taken the First Mark challenge, they end up saving thousands of dollars a year and getting better insurance than they had before. So it's such a no-brainer. It only takes a little bit of time. So schedule your First Mark challenge today. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. As always, make sure you tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. With me, Brandi Cruz and Nicole Thompson. All right. Do we have a double dose of Unbelievable today? We do. Oh, my gosh. Let's get to it. Okay, so Governor Bob Ferguson campaigned on this promise to set aside $100 million to help hire more police officers. And that's what he said it was. He said it was $100 million for more cops. Of course, they signed it. It was House Bill 2015, and that's not what it was. It's $100 million for, I guess you could use it to hire more cops, or you can use it for anything related to public safety. You could stretch that to mean, oh, just the tsunami warning we just had? Oh, you could get some of that money to help people prepare for a tsunami. I mean, public safety, very loose. You could use it for alternative first responders, you know, glorified therapists who are out there with a gun and you're going to send them into a life or death emergency. So it's not about hiring more cops. It was about Bob Ferguson pretending that he cared about law enforcement and public safety when he really didn't. And then, of course, the other little wrinkle in this was that in order for cities and counties to get some of this money, what do they have to do? Well, they had to convince voters to pass an additional sales tax. So it's like, we'll give you some more money, but you need to pass higher taxes first. Which is so crazy to me. Because what is one of the fundamental core functions that government should obviously be addressing and funding? Public safety. there's like five things where I'm okay with the government spending money because it should be the mission of the government. And we spend billions of dollars a year in this state. And in the city of Seattle, hundreds of millions of dollars a year on all sorts of nonsense. And you're saying in order to keep us safe, you'll do it, but we have to pass tax increases? You have more than enough money to fully staff, fully do everything you want to do on the public safety front. The problem is you refuse to prioritize and you put all this money into equity projects and bike lanes or whatever it is. And so you've spent money on all these wish list items, the progressive wish list. And then at the end of the day, you're like, oh no, we don't have money for the actual important stuff. So we're going to need to tax you for it. So that's what pisses me off about this whole thing. We're talking about a plan in the city of Seattle to increase treatment beds. And for the record, I like the plan. I think the plan is great. It comes from one of the only sane Seattle City Council members, Sarah Nelson, the president of the Seattle City Council, who has dealt with addiction issues herself. And she knows that the homeless issue is not a housing issue. She knows that the homeless issue is a drug issue. And so the plan that she's putting forth would address that.
The time is now for a zealous push for a righteous cause. Using an opportunity the legislature gave us by authorizing local jurisdictions to increase the sales tax by 0.1% for public safety. And the way that the legislature writes public safety in that bill does include behavioral health.
Yeah. And so again, I'm all for the city of Seattle spent passing her plan, which they did on a vote of 8-0, which they never do anything on a vote of 8-0. So this would be a good thing for the city of Seattle. We need more treatment for drug addiction and for mental health issues. But it shouldn't have to be dependent on Seattle voters increasing the sales tax. You should have more than enough money to just do it. You should prioritize this. Think of all the ways the drug crisis, the mental health crisis, the homelessness crisis sucks money out of our city. It should be priority number one. It hurts business. Therefore, it hurts our economy. It hurts revenue. It sucks so much money out of our city and our state that should be your number one priority, to be able to direct your existing funds to that issue, get the problem solved, and then you will have a plethora of money opened up for, I guess, whatever your heart desires to spend it on. But again, they passed this resolution introduced by Sarah Nelson, would dedicate up to 25% of any proposed sales tax increase to a progressive public safety initiative that would invest in critical addiction treatment services. It says the goal of the initiative is to fill treatment gaps by existing services, to support Seattle's public safety progress, and to provide a comprehensive range of recovery-based services to people struggling with substance abuse disorder. But it is dependent on a 0.1% sales tax being approved for the public safety program as set forth in House Bill 2015. It's not right. So then you come to us with, and voters will pass it. And look, I'm torn. Like, we need to do it at this point. But aren't you sick of that? Aren't you sick of having to pass tax increases for the government to do something the government should already be doing? For the government to do something it has more than enough money to do if it just prioritized its resources correctly? It's unbelievable. And so it's like, you know, I would love to tell people vote no on it. And I kind of want to say vote no on it. But the plan is great. I just want the money to come from somewhere else, not more money to come out of people's pockets to do it. And we just talked about King County did this exact same thing 3 weeks ago where they said, hey, we can get more money for public safety through House Bill 2015, but we've got to increase taxes. That's just not right. All right, let's get to a second dose of unbelievable. As a play on words, you'll find out why. Unbelievable it took us this long to get this update. That's why it's an unbelievable today. So we told you the story about the little tiny puppy that was saved by a dose of Narcan from a firefighter in Lacey. This was July 15th, where they said they were called in. There was a human overdosing in the vehicle. And then they realized the puppy was overdosing too. So the firefighter gave the puppy a little tiny mini dose of Narcan. And the puppy just popped right back to life and started wagging its tail. What bothered us, of course, is it sounded an awful lot like this puppy went back to its owner. No one was telling us what the hell happened to the puppy. We now have an update, and I think it's a positive update, and I'm actually kind of surprised by it.
What was that, a positive update?
A positive. Wow, good.
Well done.
We have a positive update for you. This is from Como News. Puppy revived by Narcan after fentanyl overdose, and owner is facing criminal charges. So we now know they are going after the owner of this puppy criminally. It says a tiny puppy in Lacey is recovering from fentanyl exposure after firefighters used the overdose reversal drug Narcan to resuscitate him. And prosecutors say his owner now faces serious criminal charges. Officers found two glass pipes and a white powder covering the driver's seat when they showed up to the scene of this overdose. The woman, later identified as Misty Reddock, told officers the powder was fentanyl and handed over the pipes, a bag of what she said was black tar heroin, and several hypodermic needles. The probable cause declaration notes that three Narcan units were used in total, two for the adult
dog.
Dog? Was there another dog?
Yes.
I'm just learning this. So there were two dogs.
Yes. The adult, I believe it's the puppy's mother.
So there were two dogs?
Yes.
Two for the adult dog, one for the puppy. The quick intervention revived the puppy, who was later transferred to Seattle Humane. We'll have more on that in a moment. Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Andrew Filick filed a declaration supporting probable cause on July 18th, arguing Reddock committed first-degree unlawful possession of a firearm, second-degree animal cruelty, and unlawful possession of a controlled substance. She was taken into custody on July 17th after returning to retrieve her vehicle and is scheduled to appear in court this coming week. So here's the good news. The little puppy has a name and has a potential future in front of it. Seattle Humane posted this video. They named the puppy Espresso. Oh my gosh. Look at it. Adoption pending.
Look at those paws.
Espresso has been through a lot over the past week. Get it? Get it?
Mm-hmm.
He nearly died from a fentanyl overdose and had to be revived with Narcan, and now he's been transferred into our care as he awaits to find a new family and preferably one that prefers caffeine to synthetic opioids. I like you for that. Let's play it again. I want to see it again. He received a clean bill of health this morning, followed by a surprise celebrity visitor who nearly took them on tour. You'll probably hear more about that later, but you don't have to wait to espresso yourself. Do you think it was the singer of Espresso?
They never say? They never did say. A bunch of people I saw asking, and they
what
never
celebrity?
Came out and said right away. So
I wonder if it's Sabrina Carpenter.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Because they say, almost took Espresso on tour. You'll have to wait to espresso yourself.
Oh. You know what? Yeah, I did see a picture of a celebrity or of somebody I didn't know, so that's probably why.
Oh, you just didn't know who it was?
Well, not this time, but I saw that in a post in the last few days, and I just didn't realize that it was connected to this.
Okay, somebody will probably know and tell us. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I'm going
to
look it up.
But Little Espresso has an adoption pending now. I'm so happy
Precious.
For Little Espresso. Take the dogs away from
and
the drug
thank
users.
You for
Take
an animal cruelty charge.
Yes.
That's unacceptable.
More than we do for kids who are exposed to fentanyl in the home. Mm-hmm. For the love of God. Just insane. So a nice little update for you there. All right. I have some breaking news on the Kamala Harris front. We'll get to next, as well as our daily subscriber show poll. First, don't forget to sign up for the Engage Conference at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, happening October 22nd and 23rd. It is a conference all about housing policy in the state of Washington. It's being hosted by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. If you want to sign up to become a member of RHA, you can do that right now, rhawa.org. It's like $260 a month if you're a small to mid-size housing provider. They basically will help you navigate this insane environment that we're all in, especially around housing policy, rent control, all of those things. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org, and make sure you sign up for the Engage Conference. I'll be there talking about housing policy as well. All right, a little bit of breaking news. I'm happy to see this one. If you want to get the poll ready too, Nicole, I don't know. I was trying to put that in the show sheet. Statement from Vice President Kamala Harris. Can she still call herself the vice president? I guess once a president, always a president, always, once a vice president. So we've been waiting to figure out if she's going to run for something, right? And she was right up there at the top of the list for possibly running for the governor of California. And even in the polling, despite her poor performance in her presidential campaign, she was leading polling, which is crazy. Thankfully, she just came out and said, I'm not running for governor. Praise Jesus. She said, over the past 6 months, I have spent time reflecting on this moment in our nation's history and the best way for me to continue fighting for the American people and advancing the values and ideals I hold dear. I'm a devout public servant, and from the earliest days of my career, I've believed that the best way I could make a difference in people's lives and fight for a better future was to improve the system from within. And it's been a profound honor to do that work and serve the people of California and our nation. In recent months, I've given serious thought to asking the people of California for the privilege to serve as their governor. I love this state, its people, its promise, it's my home. But after deep reflection, I've decided that I will not run for governor in this election. I have extraordinary admiration and respect for those who dedicate their lives to public service, blah, blah, blah. At the same time, we must recognize our politics, our government, and our institutions have too often failed the American people, blah, blah, blah. For now, my leadership and public service will not be in elected office. In case you were wondering, will she run for president again? I'll look forward to getting back out and listening to the American people. So she says she's not running for governor. I believe her there. But I don't believe that she's not going to run for anything again. I wouldn't even rule out her trying to run for president again in 2028. I mean, there's this brand of people who, like, you could lose 100 elections and they're still running for things, right? I just don't see her stepping back from political life or trying to run for something else. But at least for now, I actually believe her in this statement that she's not going to run for the governor of California. And the timing, too. That election is coming up very fast. So it's not like she has 4 years to change her mind. So I don't think she's going to be the governor of California. And honestly, if she had run, unfortunately, I think she would have won, which is a sad indictment of the vote blue no matter who crowd. I actually think that she would have run. So I'm glad that she's deciding that she's not going to do it. Okay, talking about the environmental policies, we on the show yesterday talked about how the CCA is impacting gas prices. And in the state of Washington right now, we have the third highest gas prices in the nation. I wouldn't be surprised if we hit number two or number one at some point this summer. And it's more than a dollar above the national average. A lot of that has to do with the Climate Commitment Act and the added fee as a result of that. So I wanted to ask you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, how much that, as prices continue to go up this summer, actually impacts your driving habits. So on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked, at what price would the cost of gas force you to change your driving habits? So I gave you four options here. It already is. $5 per gallon, more than $6 per gallon, or it wouldn't. Maybe like you have no choice but to drive and you can't change your driving habits at all. Nicole?
I guess five. So right now I don't see my habits changing much, although I do think about it.
But we're almost at five anyway.
Yeah.
So you're saying once you hit five, you change it half.
Once I hit five, I'm probably going to have to think twice about some. I mean, I drive a lot.
You do a lot of things.
I do a lot. And so I'll probably think differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money. Like yesterday I stopped just to fill up a little because I don't like to get gas in King County and give them my tax money. I try to go outside of the county, but I really needed gas. So I just filled up a little, even though just so I didn't have to get gas out in this county. Right. And it was still so much just to get enough to get out of the county. I was like, this is so annoying to me because this is all tax money going to them. And I was so annoyed.
Yeah, most people on Patreon, Locals and X, are saying that either it's already changing their habits or it wouldn't change their habits. So there's no sort of price point in there at five or six. Mine would probably be $6 a gallon that I would get rid of non-essential trips. Like, hey, you know, no, we're not going to drive so-and-so because like gas is $6 a gallon. Do we really need to go, right?
Right.
We don't do a lot as it is because we just work so much. So I wouldn't say that we're paying insane amounts for gas. Like Mike has a work vehicle for his job, so he doesn't have to pay for gas in that. And so that's like 5 days a week. And then, yeah, occasionally on the weekend, the only places I drive are work and yoga. That's really it. So I don't do a ton of driving, but $6 a gallon, I definitely, if Mike wanted to go on a road trip somewhere, I'd be like, no, let's do something else. Let's see here. Joe says, my company now charges a fuel surcharge to everyone. We do this instead of raising our service rate. So I'm assuming you mean like if you go out for a job, that person has to pay like a fuel surcharge, which kind of makes sense. Leslie, I walk to work, so I drive very infrequently. I fill up once a month at best. If I road trip, I just go and don't worry about it. I guess if it's so rare and you're doing it, and like road trips, even if gas is high, might still be less expensive than like flying somewhere. Greg says, unfortunately, I have no alternative method of travel. I have to use my car. Bus lines are unusable from where I live to where I work. And that is the reality for a lot of people. That's why I'm so against this like war on cars is, yeah, maybe if you guys could actually finish a Sound Transit project on time, you can have a war on cars. But when you our public transportation infrastructure right. is crap, then no.
And then when you try to, you know, ride share and things like that, that people attempt to make things easier on people and get them out of their, you know, ride shares, trying to get people out of individual cars and make it right. easier to get around. And then you tax the crap out of that and right. make it impossible.
True.
So they just make it harder and harder, everything you do.
So true. Karen says, I drive until the tank is almost empty when I cross the state line and then fill my tank. Hello, yeah. Idaho. Oh, I did that the other day when I was going, like last month when I was in Idaho for an event. I was like, I will make it across this yeah. border and I will get my gas in Idaho. And Nicole just told the story about leaving yeah. Seattle on
just
fumes.
Making sure I'm not at least in the county, but typically I get them out at the reservation so that I'd rather give them my tax money then.
Yeah, Jay Lang says we might not use our boat this year because fuel at the marina is outrageous. Way to go, Democrats. You're hurting all businesses, including boating related businesses with your ridiculous gas taxes.
At least you get the exemptions then, right? If you're in a boat, you get a rebate.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have
use
a boat.
It for marine. There's some, yeah.
We went boating with Ari Hoffman the other day. That yeah. was fun. Ari and
it
his
was
wife.
So fun.
It was a total blast. He took us on a little tour of all the mansions at Lake Washington. There mm-hmm. are some doozies. There's one that has a skeleton of a Tyrannosaurus Rex in it. I was like, these people, holy smokes. B. Larson, just because I said it wouldn't change my mind only means I don't drive that much anyway, but sometimes you need to drive, and in that regard, it wouldn't change my driving habits. As for the price, the $3 plus range is where it should be. Yeah, and that's still, you know, when we're at $3 a plus, you know, gas in other places is like a dollar something. If we get to a $3 level, mm-hmm. that would be pretty, pretty low. So, yeah, I was just curious, to what extent is it like $6 the sort of, okay, now I'm not driving anymore. But it sounds like you guys, some of you just don't have a choice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, we'll get to subscriber comments coming up next. Is Miranda here today managing the live chat?
Yes,
she was back
ma'am.
Home. I look forward to talking to her on Florida Report tomorrow. Maybe I'll get a Fargo report from her before I get a Florida report. I think that would be fun. Okay. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy you need to call if you're thinking about selling your home. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can get in contact with him there. Wes has been a real estate agent in our area for a long time. The guy knows what he's doing, and he is just a dream to work with. He is excellent at communication, never leaves you hanging, make sure that you're part of the process every step of the way. And really, you know, your opinion matters when it comes to cosmetic upgrades. He's going to make some recommendations to you, things that he thinks you can get the value out of on the back end, but it really is a collaborative process with him. So go to sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then ask Wes for a free market analysis. He'll tell you, kind of set your expectations, like, hey, here's how long it's taking homes to sell. Here's what I think we can get for your home right now if we do this, this, and this. Or maybe you don't need any cosmetic upgrades at all. But if you do, he can help manage those projects. He can even make sure you don't have to pay for any of it until closing, so it takes that financial pressure off of you. So if you're thinking about selling your home, visit sellwithwes.com, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. It really is just a better way to sell your home. Okay, all right, on the Paco story taking a dark turn, a couple super chats. Cynthia Martin, $2 for watermelon, woot woot. Yeah, it was funny because I love the sleuths. We had done so much work to try to find this guy, and Youssef just doesn't sound like a Hispanic name to me, right? So okay. I was sort of like, it doesn't, right? So when I was looking at people's names mm-hmm. in the area, Youssef just doesn't strike me as a...
Well, it doesn't sound American-ish, right?
But it sounds Middle Eastern,
okay,
not Hispanic. So, but thank God for watermelon making that connection to the U.S. Marshals bulletin and seeing the mole on his cheek and saying, I think that's our guy. Great work.
And Adrian is our original source of that, the original person that spotted the Olympian article. So thank you to Adrian.
This whole story made possible by Undivided Viewers.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, love it. You guys don't even need me, really. I'm just a mouthpiece for your greatness. Yeah. Rick Eckert, for the best investigative journalism left in Washington, $5 super chat. Jeremy Hubble, the Humi Intelligence Agency strikes again. The HIA, yes.
The HIA.
Nothing's like getting by the Humis people. Motto 87, crazy how every single one of these stories the left uses to justify their hate for ICE is false. Not some, not most, all. I will say, I haven't heard one that has been one of these sob stories that's been proven to be 100% true. I'm sure there are some out there, but like it's like so-and-so was ripped from their family, and then you find out, well, you know, they actually have had an order of deportation for 15 years that the federal government just never carried out. So there's always some little wrinkle that's not being told. On the Kirkland teacher, Kirkland man, the Brazilian who's wanted for theft, being released from custody, Summer CS says, for years before green cards, my green card, I was on H-4 visa, a spouse to H-1B visa holder, I wasn't allowed to work. Seeing illegals work freely feels like a slap on the face to those that follow laws and wait patiently. You know, I was wondering about that because I watched this really trashy show called 90 Day Fiancé.
Yes.
And a lot of it is like hot chicks from overseas who find some guy and sucker in the United States and they get this like fiancé visa. Some of them are real love stories, but some of them clearly aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't work forever.
Right.
So why would a guy who came here on a tourist visa who just applies for asylum be allowed to work just like that? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't know if that's just because of our sanctuary policies and the licenses for everyone and all of these types of things that make it very easy to get all of this proof of, I mean, it's not, I don't know what it's proof of other than you exist and you were there to take a picture, but.
That's really weird. Something still doesn't quite add up for me with the Kirkland story, but, you know, we've reached out.
But even this guy owning these businesses and employing people and all the things you have to do to run a business and to file, and if he filed taxes, like, how is that happening?
Yeah. I will say, you know, looking at his business documentation, he had some issues with filing necessary reports on time. And it looks like his mechanic shop was administratively closed in 2024. To me, that tells me that he didn't file the necessary paperwork. So in the eyes of the state, he no longer had a valid business license. That's what it tells me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you could sell a business that didn't have like a valid business license or how he continued to operate. But to me, that was sort of secondary to the larger story that he was wanted for murder. And it just got a little convoluted, but it was very strange. Mm-hmm. All right. Heather Van Slagren on Facebook. People are complaining about the teacher from Brazil. I saw in Cairo, he got bailed out by teachers union. The teachers union bailed him out?
I didn't see that.
Holy smokes. We gotta confirm that. He got bailed out by the teachers union? If that's true, oh my gosh. Can you imagine being a sane teacher and your teachers union dues goes to bailing this dude out of detention? Oh my God. Okay, we gotta figure out if that happened.
I will figure it out.
Dan, these illegals, I'm sure, got voting ballots as well delivered to their residences. I also want to check that. Did he vote? Who bailed him out? Did he vote? Mm-hmm. I'll figure that's real quick. All right. On the Fed's dismantling climate regulations, old sub Sailor, the climate industrial complex will never fully go away, not as long as politicians can make money from it. Yeah, I agree with that. That's the same reason homelessness will never fully go away. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Most may not know, but there was a hold on car shippers transporting electric cars because of the fires they have caused in ships lost at sea. Interesting. I'd never heard that.
I didn't know about the lost at sea. I knew there were fires, but I didn't know about the lost at sea.
Yeah, like burned a whole ship down carrying it. I hadn't heard about that. City council passes public safety bill. Mark II tech. The more righteous sounding the law looks, the bigger the racket. Yeah, I mean, treatment is good. Investing in treatment is what Trump wants to do. But there has to be follow through. And that's always my concern with any program that a progressive, you know, city implements is, are you actually going to make sure that they stay and get treatment?
Well, this is involuntary.
Yeah.
Part of her plan was involuntary.
You got to do it. Mm-hmm. It has to be done. On the owner being charged in the puppy OD case, my sister says, Brandy, you need to adopt this dog. I guarantee my husband is such a softie. He keeps saying, no third dog. Just we're not getting another dog. If I bring in little Narcan puppy, his little paws, he'd be like, okay, come here, little buddy. But it sounds like somebody already adopted it.
Yeah.
Adopted. I don't know if it's her or him. Espresso. Is sort of
did it say in the,
could be either.
Did it gender the puppy?
I don't know.
The
maybe the gender gets to choose he. It. Maybe the puppy gets he. To choose its own gender.
I believe it's a he.
Oh, sorry for misgendering you, Espresso. Let's see here. Kamala will become a new editor for the Olympian. Just wait till she helps There and the stories to come. Yeah, I'm sure that's what she's going to go do. And then one more super chat I want to fit in from two ladies. It is a constant struggle to have to be our best journalist. Any stories we have to research ourselves. Part of the reason I came out to Seattle and why I now believe Jonathan Cho and Undivided, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I don't think that story exists without our Undivided viewers being like, hey, this story is highly suspicious. And then you were all right. Your poll yesterday, 100% of you knew that Paco was not real. 100%. I mean, technically, he was real. Just kinda wasn't real. The person.
Like we said,
that
there was
way.
A yes. seed. There was a seed.
There was a seed of truth in there. It was a tiny seed. Tiny seed. All right. Good comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. You know, I think I've talked about this. People need to beat their kids again. You know, not harshly. Not harshly, but all these things, you know, oh, it's okay if you fail at school. Oh, it's okay if you go out and you steal a car. It's okay if you do all of this. You know, you're a victim and it's fine. And Fox News host Lawrence Jones was not having it, said kids are too weak. They need a spanking.
Please don't hit me gentle with your hands. Let's do gentle.
Mommy is getting very frustrated and very upset just like you. And if mommy is frustrated and upset, then I can't do a good job calming you down. Come here.
I don't mind it.
Child that's dropping or throwing their food onto the floor, you can by saying, you can put the food onto the plate.
Am I allowed to comment on
this? Yeah, go for it.
Some of you need to spank your kids' ass. It's a problem. Mama Jones didn't play it. My father didn't play it. And I just see all these kids going crazy in the grocery store, on the plane. And if the parents just would put them over their leg and just
look, fine, you know, don't beat them. But corporal punishment. In today's society, there must be a place for it because these kids have gone bananas. And it's their parents' fault. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Again, great job to our Undivided viewers who helped expose Paco, user Hello Watermelon, connecting things together. Got the tips. It's just good. It's good stuff, you guys. It's good stuff. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and just click on the banner right there. It says support the show. This is an independent show. So if you're sick of legacy media, mainstream media, and that's why you watch this show, got to help us fund it. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.